Welcome to Author Voices on Air and the stories behind the stories of today's literature and their authors. A presentation of Author Solutions and its publishers. Our host today connects with the writer to share the vision and inspiration behind their works. Insightful, informative, and always entertaining. Please welcome our host for this week's edition of Author Voices on Air.
Welcome to Author Voices on Air, and I'm your host, Rick Bell. Our next book is Epilepsy. If you can't do it right, just do it properly. Living with epilepsy has its ups and downs, the funny times and the not so funny times, but throughout there is always hope. By just getting on with it, one can make life genuinely easier. Learning to laugh helps, as does realizing that others have the same or similar conditions. And joining me now to share his own experience with this condition is the author Gavin Hogarth. Welcome to the show, Gavin, and thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you very much.
Tell us a little of the story of what inspired you to write this book. I know you suffer from epilepsy yourself, but how did that in itself lead to you writing this book? Tell us how it all came about.
Well, if I wrote about my own life story in a revealing and humorous way, other people might gain some help in their own motivation, and it would give them signs and help themselves and could see that there was some light at the end of the tunnel.
There's clearly a book for fellow sufferers, or if I can use that term, of epilepsy. But when you sat down and wrote this book, who did you have in mind as your intended audience or readership? Who did you write it for?
Epilepsy people in general, and more to the point, people with epilepsy that had just started to have epilepsy and didn't know anything about the symptoms and what to expect from epilepsy.
One of the things I liked about the book, and this is, it made me smile when I'm reading it, as you mentioned just a moment ago, is that it has a very light-hearted and, you know, often a humorous side to the story and the book in itself. But it also has a message. It also has a lot to teach the reader. But if you could choose one thing above everything else that you would like the reader to learn or take away, what would that one thing be?
Well, just, I hope anyway, that what I always think myself personally is not to let it get you down, as just pick yourself up. And as I see it as well, don't get depressed, but just learn to have, well, basically a good laugh at yourself after you've had a seizure. And when you look in the mirror and you're like steaming with blood or something like that, as if, oh, what have I done to myself now, sort of thing. And not let it get you down, but just have a good laugh at yourself. And that way, you don't get no depression about it.
Give us some examples of times and episodes where you've laughed at yourself and where you've thought, this is silly, or I'm silly, or, you know, and I mean that in a complimentary way. Give us some ideas of the light-hearted side of the condition, if, you know, if I can use that phraseology.
Yeah, not a problem. Our old house, the bathroom was upstairs for myself. Unfortunately, when I went upstairs to go to the bathroom, going up the stairs was a bit of a problem, considering that it was a long way to fall down. And many times I did fall down the stairs and managed to break one ankle and break both legs on the way down the stairs.
And you find that as being something to smile about. I've got to say, if that's the case, then I've got to admire you for it. What do you find is the biggest thing each day that helps you get through the day and makes you smile?
Don't let it get you down. It just, you can't, because then it'll just, all you can say then is, how can this happen to me? So I just think of it as, get back up and get on your feet sort of thing.
Do you see it as a disability, as a serious disability in your life?
Well, as I say, you can just be walking down the street and then all of a sudden you can just find yourself fully unconscious in the middle of the road, absolutely covered in blood, and you've got no knowledge of what's just happened.
Do you find it, regrettably, that some people may even think that you're drunk or that you've maybe been taking some other substances? Or do you think people understand it as much as they should?
Yeah, I've personally been spat on and kicked in the stomach while I was out, while I was collapsed on the floor, because that's exactly what they said to me, that I was a drunk and a drug addict. You just didn't understand. And, of course, you're sparing your words because you've got no control over anything that you're trying to do. You can't get up properly. So they just misunderstand what it is that you're going through. And then that's their natural reaction then.
Yeah, it's certainly tragic in itself. What would you say is the answer to, you know, making sure that doesn't happen, or, you know, it certainly happens less than it is currently?
Well, I don't think other people can see the condition through your eyes. The idea to write the book is just to give other people the idea of what epilepsy is all about. Not just to epileptics, but to other people at the same time.
Now, talking about the book and getting back to the book, if you could choose one phrase or sentence that you think best describes this book, what would that be?
Just the life of an ordinary person to whom exciting and definitely different things happen to.
Very good answer there. When you, right at the beginning, decided, I need to write this book, tell us some of those ups and some of those downs, some of the challenges that you faced when you were writing this book. And you talk quite bravely about seeing the light-hearted side, the upside of things. Tell me the upside for you of writing this book.
Well, the upside for myself was just to never let it get myself down, and that way there's no depression involved in the book, and you can just keep getting yourself off. If it's as if I feel like it's my own life story, but written in a revealing but humorous way for other people to find help in their own revulsion.
What did you find most difficult when you were writing the book? What were the biggest hurdles that you had to cross?
Just coping with the affliction and the ongoing injuries sustained while trying to write, as well as moments of depression while seriously challenging, but just as seriously uplifting with writing, knowing others may benefit actually with any condition as similar.
And how's the book been received? What kind of feedback have you had, not only from immediate family and friends and so on, but generally speaking, how has the book been received by people?
It hasn't been out a long time, so I'm not able to give. It's only been out since the 27th of November, so I'm not too sure on other people's points of view on that book, to be honest, as yet.
Okay, let me put it on a more personal level then. What do you think about the whole thing? What do you think of the book? Are you happy with the book? Do you feel that you would change anything about it? And if I can look ahead to the future, has it inspired you to continue writing? And if it has, what do you have in the pipeline that we can look forward to?
Yeah, it's definitely made me happier to write the first book. And there is a second book coming out this year.
Okay, tell us a little bit about the second book, please.
Well, the first one's just, let's say, a little bit delicate, just to start the story off, with it being a true life story. The second one is, let's say, a little bit more graphic, when I moved into a bungalow with no stairs. But it just tells you from another ongoing story, but from a different point of view then, and a graphic point of view as well.
So when can we expect your second book to be available for your readers and for our listeners?
I'm not too sure about that. It only got sent to the publishers in January, so I'm not too sure of how long it's going to take to be completely published.
Now, you've got one book that's published. You've got another book on its way to being published. What does the future hold for you as a writer? What can you see being written and published in the future?
Well, I'd definitely like to write a third one, and possibly even more as well. Once again, completely all about the same life story. But once again, I don't know if there is going to be anything else to write about, but it seems to have got the bug in me now to keep on writing.
Well, that is wonderful to hear you say that. Now, in closing, is there anything that we haven't talked about, anything that we haven't covered during the interview so far that you feel is important for your readers to know and also about for our listeners to know?
Just to keep carrying on, to be honest.
Now, I believe there's a website that our listeners can visit that they'll find out more about the book and about you as a writer, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. It's on epilepsybooks.com. But it's like a blog page, which will tell you everything about the book and places to buy the book from as well. Different places apart from Amazon and Google. You could buy it from that site directly, but it'll give you a preview of the couple of pages of the book so you can read, you know, from the start. And I think it's 6 pages from the start of the book that you can actually read to give motivation to other people before they actually buy the book.
Well, that's certainly worthwhile, because as you mentioned, being able to get a taster of what the book's about really will make our listeners want to go out and buy the book. So thank you for that. Epilepsy, If You Can't Do It Right, Just Do It Properly, is published by Ex Libris and is available direct from the publishers at exlibris.com and all good bookstockists. I would like to once again thank my guest today, the author, Gavin Hogarth, for joining me. Many thanks, Gavin, and we wish him every success with not only this book, but his future writing. Thank you, Gavin.
Thank you very much.
This is Rick Bell for Toganet Radio 2.0. Thank you for listening.
Author Voices on Air returns after these short messages.
Have you heard? The pages of American Patchwork and Quilting magazine come to life on our new weekly online radio show, American Patchwork and Quilting. Join Pat Sloan, our blogging and quilt designer host, as she talks about the latest trends, ideas, and inspirations. Her guests include quilt pattern designers, authors, quilt shop owners, and our editors. All quilters, just like you. Call in with your questions. Get quilting tips from industry experts. Learn about free patterns. Hear behind-the-scenes stories from our magazines, American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilt Sampler, and Quilts and More. Get the scoop on free stuff and find out more about the best independent quilt shops in North America. To listen to a live show, tune in Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern. Just log on to allpeoplequilt.com/radio. To hear past shows, go to iTunes and search for American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We hope you'll join us because we know that quilting changes everything.
Welcome back to Author Voices on Air as we continue the stories behind the stories of today's literature and their authors.
Welcome to Author Voices on Air, and I'm your host, Rick Bell. Our next book is Traveling by Road, Rail, Sea, Air, and Wheelchair in North America. This story is an adventure experienced by Mike and his disabled wife, Sylvia. Sylvia, who has Parkinson's disease, made the journey with the aid of a wheelchair across North America for 4 weeks in September and October 2016. They reacquainted themselves with old friends and made some new ones. They experienced a succession of interesting and, in some cases, amusing encounters along the way. And joining me now to tell us more about the adventure, about the story, and about the journey is the author, Mike Fox. Welcome, Mike, and thank you for joining me. Now, as mentioned during the introduction, this was more than just a holiday or vacation. It was more, in fact, than just an adventure. But going right back to the beginning, tell us a little of the story behind what inspired you to write this book.
Okay, well, I've always had a desire to cross the Rocky Mountains on a train, partly because I'm a railway fanatic, and partly because I just love grandiose mountain scenery. So I managed to persuade my wife that was a great idea, because she hasn't always become a convert to my railway trips, but she did on this occasion. And it kind of grew from there, because my wife got persuaded by a slightly zealous travel agent into booking on a cruise up the coast, the Canadian and American coast, up into Alaska. So that got added on, and then it sort of transmogrified into a various adventures of various other things, really. We did a stint on the American side, Chicago, where we've got friends, and also Indiana. And then we bolted on at the end eastern Canada, so we saw the Niagara Falls and Toronto, Montreal, and Quebec. And that was really good. It was a very interesting and enjoyable holiday.
How did that then become the book itself?
Okay. I have a tradition, whenever I go away, of writing a travel memoir. And I used to do this, my father, who's no longer with us, but he was always very keen on me writing these travel stories. And so I used to do them for him initially. And I guess I carried on doing them after he passed away about 3 years ago. And some friends read my travelogue on Canada and North America and egged me on, really, to publish it. So I blame a number of my friends, really, for saying, have a go. So I then emailed various publishing companies, just went on to Google and publishing, and I say Author House was one of the ones that got back to me. They seemed to quite like the story as well, and I was pushing at an open door with them, really. And then we've just gone through the process of having the book published on Kindle and softback.
They mentioned there that it was your friend reading your journal that was the inspiration behind it. But aside from your friends, who do you think this particular book will appeal to in particular, and why?
I think one of the big differences between my book and many other travel books, and I'm not saying mine's better, but I think it's different in as much as it's the point of view of somebody, i.e. my wife, who is disabled, who needs a wheelchair quite a lot of the time, who has Parkinson's disease, and all these things become a big challenge for her. And yet she was willing to go on this trip and really give it everything. And I think if it's written for anybody, apart from myself, I guess, it's for all those people out there who feel, well, I'm slightly disabled or more than slightly disabled. Could I do a trip like this? And I think the answer is, yes, you can. If you plan it well, and if you take sensible precautions and basically the doors are open. And one of the great experiences for us in North America was how friendly people were, how accommodating they were, how they helped us at a whole range of interesting points. I mean, we had one slightly miraculous story, which didn't really revolve around my wife's disability, but we had a lot of really nice examples of people even coming up to us in the street and saying, can we help you? Can we push? Can we take a bag for a time? And then we had one example in Montreal where there were roadworks galore, and we got to one place where we had to cross this uneven ground, and we quickly came to the conclusion we couldn't take the wheelchair across. Certainly, we couldn't wheel my wife in it. And as we were discussing this between ourselves, two burly men came up to us and said, okay, we'll do it. And before my wife had a chance of protesting even or saying it's okay,
She was on the other side of the road. They just lifted her up and took her across. I mean, that's perhaps an extreme example, but there are other times when we're pushing the wheelchair up ramps and people just come up to us and say, no, we can do that for you. It's no problem. So that was really nice. Really good.
So aside from the help that and the friendliness that you received on your adventure, is there anything else? Is there any funny, quirky story sticks in your mind?
There are other aspects of this which I think are quite interesting. And one of these was what we consider to be semi-miraculous, in that we were boarding a night train for Montreal, and you have to weigh all the luggage on Canadian railways like you do on aircraft. And my bag came to several pounds over the limit, and we were told we'd have to get that out, and we hadn't got any of the bags that were free. And a nun appeared out of nowhere and just said, have my bag. And we said, well, that's yours. It's a really lovely bag. And she said, it's okay. Your need's greater than mine. And I turned round, and she wasn't there. She, like, disappeared in a crowd. Now, I'm not saying it was necessarily miraculous, but it was amazing. And when we put my heavier stuff, such as books and maps, into her bag, it came to exactly the same amount that we needed. And we basically, the lady behind the baggage weight place just gave me a high five. And that was quite a nice little story in itself.
Absolutely.
So that was good.
And it is a story that restores your faith in humanity and, you know, and other people. And the fact that, you know, there are a lot of nice people out there. And not just that, but it had a little tinge of weirdness about synchronicity, is the word I think I'm looking for. That, you know, the story with the nun and who gave you your bag, and it's exactly the weight that you needed. Now, as books go, it's not just your average travel log, travel diary, if you like. It's certainly something different. So if I was to ask you to give me just two or three sentences that you think sums up this book for our listeners, what would that be?
I think one would be triumphing in disability, that even with my wife having a wheelchair access much of the time, we got through and saw a lot. I think another aspect were the encounters that we had with people from almost all over the world. I think one of the people who's written a little review for me, in fact, I didn't ask him to, he just wrote a review in Amazon, said he lost count of the number of nationalities that we bumped into, but it certainly was from all over the world. And I think a slightly quirky thing, I would say, was the number of people who spoke about cricket, which I was not expecting in North America. But we had taxi drivers from the Caribbean, where you would imagine it. We had a janitor from Pakistan again, maybe not surprising. But in America, in Indiana, a lady came up to me and wanted to know all the rules of cricket because she was just interested in sport and knew I was English and therefore would know something about cricket. So there must have been about half a dozen different places in the book where the game of cricket comes up. Now, I could not have told you at the outset of our holiday that I'd be mentioning the rules of cricket.
Well, I think the one question that our listeners will be dying for me to ask you is, what are the rules of cricket? And do you actually know the rules? Do you actually know the rules?
I've only got
cricket?
2 hours. I think one of the slightly amusing one was with the janitor from Pakistan. I didn't know he was from Pakistan at the time, and I asked him the rules of baseball, and he replied by saying, "Well, baseball's pretty tame and rubbish, really." He said, "The game you really want to get involved with is cricket." And then he sort of turned the conversation round to cricket without me saying a thing. And then at the end, I said, where are you from then? And he goes, well, Pakistan. So I said, well, I'm not really surprised in that case. He's so keen on cricket. And we had a bit of a laugh over that. So it's a complicated game. And I guess with the lady from Indiana who asked me, I must have spent about half an hour with her going through how you score runs, how you're out, how many in each team, how exciting the game can be. I can see my wife yawning at this point, but I think it's a really exciting game. And it was just a nice, it was a kind of ambassador role for Britain in the sense that we play cricket. And I was just surprised at how many Americans expressed, or people in America, expressed an interest in the game.
How did they know that you would know the rules of cricket? Was it simply because the fact you're from England?
Virtually everybody that we spoke to, when people asked where you're from, as I say, one or two then started asking about cricket. And again, it was a complete surprise to me. I wouldn't have thought that. I mean, some of the more expected things were some of the great railway journeys we did. And we did a number, including crossing the Rockies, but we did one in Alaska, which was pretty hairy on trestle bridges and tunnels and very steep gradients. And we did a journey, as I say, to Montreal from Toronto on one of the mainline expresses in Canada. So we had a variety of railway experiences, of which I write about at some length. And some friends of mine who are not particularly keen on railways say we even enjoyed the railway bits. So that was one area of my special interest that came through. I think it was just meeting different peoples. I mean, we met the Amish, for example, in Indiana. They live a very simple lifestyle and very different from the commercial world around them. And we rubbed shoulders with a few of them. And that was something quite special, which I hadn't realised we were going to see. Then we met some older friends, people we've known for decades in one case, who were very hospitable to us. But we met lots of new people, some of whom we've exchanged emails with and got to know a bit better since we left. So a whole range of experiences, not just the geography or the culture or the climate or the food. It was just a wonderful time for us, really.
I think the one thing that comes to mind here, listening to you talking and, you know, having read the book as well, is that the one pity that I have to say, the one disappointing thing about it is that there wasn't a film crew, a documentary film crew on this adventure with you, because I think, and I'm sure my listeners would agree, I think this would make a superb travel documentary, don't you think?
I'm happy to go back again if somebody can provide a film crew.
Well, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, you never know. Now, go back to the book itself. You mentioned that you'd been writing travel logs with your father for a long time. But there's a there is a difference, a vast difference between writing a log or a diary or whatever for your own pleasure and for keeping records of experiences. But writing it as a book, what were some of the challenges that you faced in writing a book for publishing? And on the positive side of it, what did you find most rewarding?
Okay. I haven't written a proper travel book to be published before, so there were some surprises, and the procedure was perhaps longer than I thought it would be because of the professionalism of the printers in getting things right. I've been used to scribbling things down as I go along, and I write very quickly, and I can scribble things out at a fast rate of knots. So having to slow down and be more considered was a challenge. And your second question, what it's done for me? I thought it's given me a bit more confidence in that I can get something published. I've been very pleased at the reviews that have been put on Amazon about it, one of which is an anonymous one. But they've all been rated 5-star by Amazon, and that's been really good. So I've enjoyed the whole experience immensely, I have to say.
And I think my next question has to be, has it inspired you to want to continue writing, maybe even a follow-up book for this or something totally different?
I've actually had a second book published, and the second book was when my wife and I went teaching at a mission school in Brazil, and its title is Vamos a Brasil, and it's slightly shorter, but it's along the same lines, I think, as my first book, and it's the encounters I came across with a lovable but lively and colourful group of students and attempting to teach English to them. And we enjoyed ourselves immensely for about a month in Brazil doing that. So, yeah, that was the second book.
Do you have any other books that are maybe just in the thought process or in the
pipeline? There is one in the thought process, which I've initially entitled The Italian Therapy Job. My wife went to Italy, well, I went with her last June to a Parkinson's research centre in the north of Italy, near the Alps. And we spent 2 weeks there. And again, it's kind of a chronology of how she coped with a lot of challenges to sort of improve her walking. And one or two escape trips that I did to various areas in around northern Italy. So that's a much more embryonic stage. It's not yet, it's a long way off being published.
Now, in closing, is there anything that we haven't quite covered yet that you would like our listeners to know that you feel is important to know about the book or about yourself as an author or about Parkinson's disease, as you know your wife is a sufferer of?
There is a great deal of ignorance about Parkinson's, and that's not surprising because most people don't have it. But I think it's important to show there's kind of light at the end of the tunnel, and that there's a lot of research going on, and that people with Parkinson's can still get out and do a lot of things that are quite exciting. And I think my wife's a kind of leading exponent of that. And then I think with the book I'm going to write, hopefully, or I've drafted it, just to show how there is some really good work out there to address the issues that Parkinson's sufferers face. So I think that's one big message. But anybody who likes railways, anybody who's interested in geography, who likes meeting people, I think these are all areas where the book could hopefully be a good read for them.
And possibly even the movie or the documentary series to follow. Thank you, Mike.
Well, if somebody wants to do that, I'll be game.
I'm sure the listeners are out there getting in touch with those documentary filmmakers right now. Okay, thank you for that. Travelling by Road, Rail, Sea, Air and Wheelchair in North America is published by Author House and is available direct from the publisher at authorhouse.com/bookstore and all good book stockists. Once again, I'd like to thank my guest today, the author Mike Fox, for joining me on the show to share the wonderful story of their adventures. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
This is Rick Bell for Toginet Radio 2.0. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
Author Voices on Air returns after these short messages.
It's the Fitness Minute with fitness expert Annette Hammond.
When your focus is to lose weight or maintain your present weight, exercising effectively to burn the most calories is crucial. You want to give yourself every advantage to burn as many calories as possible. One good tip is to do your strength training exercises standing up so you can keep your heart rate up. Another tip is to perform multi-joint exercises when you can. For example, as you're doing a forward lunge, add bicep curls while you're coming up from the lunge. Another example is to execute a wide squat, and as you're coming up from the squat, perform a shoulder press. By doing these multi-joint exercises, you're putting more demands on your body, keeping your heart rate up, and working more muscles at the same time. The goal is to burn the most calories during that workout. I'm Annette Hammond. To hear other fitness and weight loss tips, visit our website at AnnetteHammond.com.
Welcome back to Author Voices on Air as we continue the stories behind the stories of today's literature and their authors.
Welcome to Author Voices on Air, and I'm your host, Rick Bell. Our next book takes us on a tantric journey, the treatment of emotional detox through Tantra and Teo bodywork. It is engineered by a pioneer technique called bodywork. And joining me now is the founder of the Tantric Journey School of Healing and Awakening and the author of the book Emotional Detox Through Bodywork, A Woman's Guide to Healing and Awakening. And joining me now is, it gives me great pleasure to welcome Mal Weller-Ratney. Welcome to the show. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us today. Now, the book itself has so much to really involve our listeners, but tell us a little bit about how you came to write this book. What was your main motivation or inspiration?
Yeah, I have emotional detox body therapist for the last 20 years. And now, a couple of years ago, I started a school called Tantric Journey School of Healing and Awakening. And I wrote this book to use it as a vehicle to promote the school, to get more students and to share the knowledge that I have over the last 20 years so that everybody in the world can do the same work that I do. So this is the reason for me to write this book.
Now, I mentioned during the introduction, as part of the title of the book, in fact, it refers to it as A Woman's Guide to Healing and Awakening. Did you write it specifically for women, or who did you write it for? Who would you say is your target readership, your target audience?
My target audience is really anybody who has experienced trauma in the past and who are holding on to this trauma in the body without letting go. And also because I have worked for the last 20 years with women, so this is the reason why I wrote this book for women. But having said that, men also hold emotions in the body, so this book will be related to men as well. So I got few chapters how to benefit from this work that I do. So this book is, even though it's written towards targeted on women, but actually men will benefit a lot as well. Woman's perspective, because it took me 20 years to understand woman. So this book is written so that men could benefit a lot by reading this book.
So it's not really just about healing yourself. It could also help in healing a relationship.
Yes, it's a helping a relationship, helping that I've been stagnant in the body due to past trauma. And everybody in the world goes through different types of trauma. And by holding on to this trauma, it blocks our natural energy flow that can have a self-repairing mechanism in our body. So it blocks it. So by removing these blocks, these negative stagnant emotions, you clear the pathway for the natural energy flow to flow freely throughout the body, and also to increase the blood circulation in the body. Energy and the blood, it knows what to do, how to help the body to have a much more healthier body and a life.
Now, you used the term trauma there. Tell us a little more about the type of trauma that you mean in your book.
Well, there's trauma. You could have psychological trauma. You could have sexual abuse. You can have... There are five senses that trauma can enter your body. It's something you have seen or something you have heard because you live in a different culture, different religion, different upbringing. So you were taught to live your life in a different way. Or you have heard something, or you have... somebody has touched you inappropriately, or you have touched someone inappropriately, or you have smelled something that could be trauma, or you have tasted something. So trauma can happen through all our five senses. So trauma can happen in your childhood, trauma can happen when you are in your teenage, or trauma can happen when you are an adult. Trauma can happen if you go to war, there is trauma. If you work as a fireman or in the police or army, you have trauma. And also day to day in our life at home, we have trauma. And if you experience trauma as a child, the impact is much far greater than as an adult. So we all, throughout our life, we experience trauma, and then we collect this trauma without dispersing them. So we get stagnant with negative emotions in the body, and this is what that disrupts our natural energy flow and make us ill and dysfunctional. and not being able to reach our highest potential in life.
Now, if you were asked to describe this book to our listeners, how would you describe it?
Well, this book is, the way to describe is, this book, if you are looking for a spiritual path, this is to get rid of your negative feelings, negative thoughts, negative emotions, negative actions from your body, cellular memory. As soon as you remove this negativity, the body will create a greater capacity for positivity, where you will embrace a lot of love, pleasure, sensitivity, happiness, and all the positive things in life. I think that's really a good way to live.
Now, obviously, you're aware that there are many books on similar topics. I use the word similar because not exactly the same, because this book is certainly unique in many ways. But in your own words, what would you say makes it unique? What would you say makes it stand out from the crowd?
The uniqueness of this book is about, there are a lot of, basically the trauma actually stores in the body, not in the mind. Because a lot of people think when they are lonely, when they are feeling fearful or shame or sadness, it is all in your mind. But this is not true. Scientifically, it has been proved. All the trauma and the negative emotions are stored in our body. So there are many books written on body work, doing massages and body therapy and many, many different therapies based on the body, which is very healing because you can get rid of emotions and trauma. But I have gone beyond the body to work on the genital area. Genital area is never touched, never spoken about, never seen. It's a place where people actually hide because of the culture, the religion, and the upbringing that we are living in. But that doesn't mean to say these genital areas are not part of our body. It is made with the same flesh, blood, nerves, and ligaments and tendons. It's the same. So in my book, in my work, I have treated the genital area is exactly the same as any other part of the body where you could have blockages of circulation blockages and blockages from the energy. So this is what this book is unique, because I work on a holistically working on the whole body without leaving out the genital area. That's what this book makes it unique.
How's the book been received by pupils, if I can use, or students of your school?
Well, even though I wrote this book for women, I got in my school, it's always, I got 50% of men and 50% of women. So it's really interesting, because even though I've written the book for women, a lot of men are very interested to learn about women. So, because it took me 20 years to understand that subject. So now, if a man can read this book within a matter of a few hours, they could gain a vast amount of knowledge. And this knowledge is based, not just the Western knowledge that we know now, but it's based on the Eastern knowledge that has been there for thousands of years. So this book is really good for both men and women to read.
And you talked there about the Eastern knowledge, and that's something that more and more people in modern society, both patients and the medical profession themselves, are becoming more acceptant of, or accepting, I should say, of some of the teachings of ancient Eastern cultures. Why do you think that is? Do you think it's just that they're realizing that, you know, there is a lot of truth in it?
You see, the medical, the science actually came from the East. And medical science is very new. It's only a few hundred years old. But this Eastern science and the philosophy has been there for thousands of years. And they didn't have chemotherapy and surgery those days. But they had other methods to heal people, to help people. And still people lived very happily in ancient times. So there's a wealth of ancient knowledge that needs to be brought into the current, our lifestyle, which could improve a lot and it could benefit us a lot. And this is exactly what I'm doing. Lost knowledge, or which is not recognized, but now I'm introducing it. And it is extremely beneficial and it's extremely popular.
Now let's talk about the book itself, and in particular about your experience writing this book, what were some of the difficulties that, or challenges, if I could use that term, that you faced when you sat down and started to write this book? And there must have been a lot of rewarding experiences as well. Tell us both sides of that equation, the challenges and the rewards.
The biggest challenge was I didn't know how to put this work that I do into a book to a level that the normal, the mainstream people will understand and accept what I'm going to say. Because when I talk about the bodywork, when I address the genital area, this is normally not acceptable by the mainstream as a therapy. So that was very challenging for me. I had to find ways how to write this book. So I had to do a lot of research and prove that various research that is available, that there is a cellular memory in the body, there is trauma gets stored, there's molecules of emotions in the body, and also genital area is also part of our body. So I had to explain these things in the book, and this is very challenging because the culture, the environment, and the upbringing that we are living in is not accepting this type of work that we do. But now I'm bringing to the mainstream, and whoever who wants to accept this, who will think, who will benefit from this work, then they will benefit by reading this book.
Has it inspired you to write any further books on this particular topic, or maybe something completely new and different?
Yes, now since I've written this book and I started the school about 2 years ago, the school is called Tantric Journey, and I've started doing this with three modules, and the module one is about clothes on bodywork. So you can release trauma and emotions when somebody is completely wearing all the clothes on by using certain pressure points, certain bodywork. We can release emotions and trauma. So I got this particular module one accredited in the UK. So we got CPD on that. So now this is really the first stage that we are going to introduce into the mainstream. So now I'm writing my next book. It's about a manual for the module one, clothes on bodywork, emotional release. So it will have detailed diagrams and every point that you need to press. So it will be a very detailed, like a manual, like a Bible, to release emotions from the body. So this is the book that I'm going to start now, probably, hopefully, finish by end of this year. And it's called Emotional I haven't even given a name to it, but it's actually a manual to do this clothes on bodywork, emotional detox.
Well, we'll certainly look forward to that. Now, in closing, I believe you've got a website that our listeners can visit to find out more about the book and about the work that you do. And also, if there's anything else that we haven't covered so far that you'd like to tell us about, that you feel is important to our listeners and to your readers and your students.
I think in my book I have written actual case studies, of course not using clients' names, but I have used true case studies showing their history, what happened to them as trauma, and also how it has helped them with this work that I do. So these case studies are really relevant because this will resonate with the people who are reading this, because they probably have gone through the same trauma in their life and they don't know what to do. What people normally do is they either go for talking therapies. When you go to talking therapies, you're talking to a mind that is disconnected from the body due to trauma, and you cannot access the body to heal the body. So this work, body work, directly we go into the body where the trauma is and we try to release this trauma, which helps them a lot. So, yeah, by reading these case studies, also a lot of people, when they are traumatized, when they're suffering with depression, they take many drugs. Prescribed drugs or many different addictions that they to comfort their discomfort that they're experiencing in the body. So I have got a lot of case studies in the book to explain how these things can be helped by releasing emotions that are stagnant in the body.
Thank you for that. Emotional Detox Through Bodywork, A Woman's Guide to Healing and Awakening, It's published by Ex Libris and is available direct from the publisher at exlibris.com and all good bookstockers. Once again, I'd like to thank my guest today, the author and writer, Mal Waratne. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much, Rick.
This is Rick Bell for Toginet Radio 2.0. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
Join us again next week at the same time as we explore the passion and inspiration behind the works of today's authors right here on Author Voices on Air.